Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been declined.
Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left.
Two weeks ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the broadcast. I am so excited for this Saturday, November 7th. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am your hostess with the financial mostess, Heather. And we are broadcasting live from the HQ Real Estate and Investment offices right here in Scottsdale, Arizona. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome to the broadcast. And this Saturday at 9 a.m. and every Wednesday at 9 a.m., we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth radio program and bring you crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes. Underscore attitudes for the single purpose of achieving financial independence. And today's show is so important about underscoring the attitude. And I'll tell you why, because this week's key in the Keys to Riches is take emotion out of the picture. And so many people need to listen to this because it's just part of what we do. We are emotional creatures. We feel. We have the power of reason above all other creatures. As a result of this, sometimes it can interfere with our ability to make effective decisions. So we're going to talk all about that today in the second hour when we talk about our key. And holy smokes, we got a great show in store for you today. We also have our Unlock Your Wealth protege, Nikki Payne. We'll be checking in with her in the second hour and talking about what her progress has been and where we are with her in her pursuit of accomplishing financial independence. And for those of you who have been following along, you know, we've had some trials and tribulations, and this week will give us even more events to talk about with Nikki. So we will have that coming up in the second hour in addition to our regularly scheduled Nuts and Bolts segment and our News by the Numbers with the ever-popular Karen Durm, our radio show producer, our e-zine editor. And this hour we have an exciting guest. We have David Golubchik. I think I'm pronouncing it right. David Golubchik. And we're going to talk all about that B word, bankruptcy. So we're going to have him on, and we're going to go through the ins and outs, what to expect, how to know if it's something that's even an option for you, because some debts survive bankruptcy. So we're going to talk about which debts do, which debts, whether or not it's worth filing a bankruptcy and taking that hit on your credit, or maybe there'll be other ways that we can resolve our credit woes. So we're going to have him on for our Investor's Edge segment, so I'm excited about that. We also have our Millionaire Minute, which lucky seven, think about that. We're going to have the three keys to success and the four steps for becoming financially independent and making your millions count today. And it all starts with attitude, so this whole show is going to all be about attitude and perspective. I'm so excited about that. But first, let's get to the nitty-gritty, and let's talk about some minutes on your money. Fannie Mae to rent out homes instead of foreclosing. From Yahoo Finance, Alan Zibel, who's a real estate writer for the Associated Press, writes, thousands of borrowers on the verge of foreclosure will soon have the option of renting their homes from Fannie Mae under a policy announced Thursday. Now, it says the government-controlled company, through its new Deed for Lease program, will allow borrowers to transfer ownership to Fannie Mae and sign a one-year lease with month-to-month extensions after that. Kind of interesting. Instead of doing a deed in lieu, it's a deed for lease. The program will eliminate some of the uncertainty of foreclosure, keep families and tenants in their homes during a transitional period, and help to stabilize neighborhoods and communities, Jay Ryan, a Fannie Mae vice president, said in a statement. But the effort is likely to affect a relatively small number of homeowners. In the first half of the year, Fannie Mae took back about 1,200 properties through this process known as deed in lieu of foreclosure. And what that simply means is if you're a homeowner and you don't desire to go through the foreclosure process, you kind of want to give it back, like a voluntary repossession on a car, and you want to give it back, you do a deed in lieu of foreclosure. For the lender, deeds in lieu of foreclosure are not a good option. Most lenders would prefer to foreclose, and let me tell you why. If I am a first mortgage holder and you want to do a deed in lieu, what happens if I accept that back is I accept, in addition to that deed in lieu, any and all tax liens that you have not paid, second, third mortgages, mechanics liens, any other instruments that encumber that property financially, I am now responsible for. So a deed in lieu is not a good option, because if I foreclose on a property, all of those debts after me, if I'm the primary mortgage holder, are expunged, gone, wiped clean, out the door. So that's why lenders would rather go through the foreclosure process, because that is usually more affordable to pay attorneys to facilitate that and all of the court fees than it is to accept a deed in lieu because of all of those secondary liens that could be against the property that they are not aware of. So this is a big step. I just want you to know, this is a big step to do this for Fannie Mae. It says that, you know, it's likely to affect a small number of homeowners, and it says it pales in comparison to the 57,000 foreclosed properties that they repossessed in the first half of the year. So while neither option is particularly attractive for the homeowner, a deed in lieu seems less likely to harm the borrower's credit record. So it goes down like a voluntary repossession. If you've ever had to give a car back because you couldn't afford the payments or the repairs exceeded what you owed and it didn't make sense for you to continue with that obligation, and so you did a voluntary repossession, that's exactly what this looks like, except it's a bigger dollar amount. So I worry about this whole score thing, the credit record deal, but we'll talk about that later. It says the rental program is designed to help homeowners who don't qualify for a loan modification under the Obama administration plan, but still wants to remain in the home. Fannie Mae is not planning to market the homes for sale during the one-year rental period, which I think is a bad idea. They should sell it to an investor because they could get more money for it if you have a tenant that's paying. If they've got seasoning on it, which means that they've collected payments so that they know it's a performing asset, they could get more money for it. So I think that's silly. But what do I know? You know, I'm just me, a little old real estate broker in Scottsdale who has a radio show. But anyway, the rental program, Fannie Mae has hired all of this out to an outside company, which officials declined to identify who's handling it, but they'll be the ones to manage the properties. Here's what you need to know if this could be a viable option for you. To qualify, homeowners have to live in the property as their primary residence and prove that they can afford the market rent, which would be determined by the management company. And it says the rent can't be more than 31% of their pre-tax income. So that's gross income, for those of you who aren't familiar with that pre-tax term. So 31% is that magic number that you need to stay under. So if your current market rents are lower than your current mortgage obligation and you could afford to rent, this may be a quality option for you and your family. Now, Fannie Mae's sibling company, Freddie Mac, launched a similar effort in March. That policy requires that the foreclosure to be complete and only allows month-to-month leases, so not as much stability. A Freddie Mac spokesman declined to say how many people have participated at this point. So, interesting thought. Could potentially be a viable option, but my editorial embellishment is that I think Fannie Mae is blowing a big opportunity to get more of their money back by not selling them. For an investor, cash flow is what motivates a lot of them. I have one client that refuses to do anything, no development deals, no spec land deals. He only wants income-producing real estate, stuff that he can make money on today. He's not a renovate. He's not a down-the-road kind of guy. He's like, I'm writing a check, and I'm getting into the property, and I'm starting to collect checks day one. And for those types of investors, Fannie Mae is silly not to season these properties and collect 3 months' worth of rent and put them out there. They can get more money if it's a performing asset. And there are so many people that would love to have an investment property that already has a tenant in it, that they don't have to go through all of that mucky muck. It costs money to place a tenant. If they don't do it themselves, they have to hire someone to find the tenant and qualify them and all of that good stuff. So I think they're missing out on a big opportunity. But that's just my two cents for whatever that's worth to you. Don't fall for these 10 crazy landlord claims. This is from Karen Aho of MSN Real Estate. Your landlord has a legal obligation to you and to the rental agreement you both signed. Learn about some of the false claims a landlord may make and the truth behind them. The first landlord claim that you should not believe, you can just do the dishes by hand. What? A tenant's response is, yes, I know that it is possible to do dishes by hand. I've even done it before, but the apartment that I am paying you to use came with a working dishwasher. So guess what, landlord? Fix it. You can't just let it remain inoperable and expect that you're going to get the same rental dollar, says Jane Portman, landlord-tenant lawyer and author of Every Tenant's Legal Guide. It's just basic contract law. Hello? So we have something actually here in Arizona that's called constructive notice. So when the air conditioner breaks and they tell you to turn on a fan or something similar to this, you have constructive notice. If you give a notice to your landlord, and this is Arizona, so I'm not speaking for everybody else, but per the Arizona Landlord Tenant Act, you can notify your landlord of a deficiency, and if they choose not to repair it after 15 days, you can either break your lease and move, or you can choose to repair it and deduct it from your next rental payment. So I would repair it, Xerox the receipt, and send that over with your next check with the appropriate deductions made. And that's how you can remedy that one. Number two, a landlord's claim, well, it was like that when you moved in. Thanks for playing. Oh, good, so you knew that the blinds were broken. Great, now get over here and fix them. Okay, for somebody to say something like that is ridiculous. This landlord excuse is also known as you rented the apartment as is an all too common line. Unfortunately, it may be a valid claim for cosmetic matters or shoddy workmanship, but it doesn't give the landlord a get out of repairs free card. State law in every state except Arkansas guarantees tenants an implied warranty of habitability, regardless of when they spotted the flaw. If it's a safety or health issue, tenants in many states can deduct the cost of repairs or withhold partial rent, but be warned, get advice from a tenant advocate first or an attorney. You can't just stop paying rent, as many renters believe. You're still obligated to make that payment contractually. Non-payment is grounds for eviction. So instead, send the landlord a certified letter requesting the repairs and search online or ask a city council member for the name of a tenant center in your area. Now, one of the things that you can do, and here in Arizona, we have this great Arizona landlord-tenant law. It's phenomenal what it does for both parties. It explains rights and responsibilities of both sides of the fence. So that's what I like about it. One of the things that the Arizona Association of Realtors rental contract, which is why it's so important to consult a realtor member of the National Association of Realtors, because they have standardized contracts. And in that standardized contract, you're given a document that you do a walkthrough to identify things that aren't in working order or habitable when you walk through with your real estate professional. But you are also given a second document that allows you to live there for 5 days and document anything else. So, like, if you don't flush all the toilets and turn on every faucet and plug in every plug, you don't know what works and what doesn't work. It's warranted to work if you use the standardized contracts provided by the National Association of Realtors. And so then you have your remedies. It should, you just always notify in writing. And, again, if you're concerned or don't understand the law, go to a tenant advocacy center or consult an attorney that deals with landlord-tenant law and make sure that your rights are protected. Never stop paying on a contract because, again, that's grounds for eviction. Even if they didn't perform, if you go to a court of law, they're still going to have the right to evict you. Number three, landlord's claim, that will get fixed. And I like this sarcastic tenant's response. Great, just give me a call when it's fixed and that lease will get signed. Again and again, landlords promised me this, and that's what it was, a promise. Absolutely. Do not sign a lease. Do not give a landlord any money until what you see is what you want, because that's all you're ever going to get, ever. So get it in writing if you are going to sign a lease, and make sure that they're committed to it. Don't take any verbal representations, because verbal representations may or may not hold up in a court of law in your area. Number four, landlords claim, what a mess. I needed all your security deposit to fix the thumbtack holes. Oh, my goodness, I'm so sorry that while paying you $15,000 to live in your apartment last year, I actually lived in your apartment. So you need to document and photograph things on your way out the door so you can substantiate if you have to dispute a non-refunded deposit. The landlord needs to document all of the work that was done and subtract it and still refund you that. If it's not documented, he doesn't have a basis for withholding the deposit. Number five, landlords claim water noise. Talk to the neighbor. The tenant's response, okay, how about if I go talk to the neighbor, and what about an unresponsive landlord you are? So I guess Karen Tuominen is a communications consultant, and she called her landlord the day she moved into her Brooklyn two-bedroom saying that it was raining inside. He literally said to my face, you really should say something to the guy upstairs because he takes wild baths. He fills it up. He's got candles all over, and then it drips down. Karen says it was outrageous, and I guess he didn't think that I would ever ask the guy, but his bathroom was completely dry, and now he's a friend of mine. So later the tenants bonded again, and when it was time that the landlord refused to exterminate for bed bugs and blamed individual tenants instead, in both cases, he was forced to make repairs. A tenant's contract for a habitable dwelling is with the landlord, not with the neighbors. So it is your responsibility as the landlord to make sure that that premises is habitable. Otherwise, guess what? You're paying for them to stay in Motel 6. So know your rights. There are a litany of others, and if you are interested in finding out the rest of these 10 crazy landlord claims, just send us an email, and we'd be happy to forward those items to you. Simply do that by sending us an email to Minutes on Your Money, M-O-M, Mom, at unlockyourwealth.com, Mom, at unlockyourwealth.com, and you too can have the rest of the 10 crazy landlord claims you shouldn't fall for. Moving forward, it is time for our Investor's Edge segment, and I am so excited about our next guest, David Golubchik. Hopefully I'm not crunching his name. He is a partner at Neil Bander Rankin and Brill. Since 2003, centers his legal skills on business reorganization, bankruptcy, and related litigation, plus appellate work. He's been a member of his firm since 99, and he also heads its pro bono program. His cases include Easy Riders, Canda Bar, DBA The Pleasure Chest, Video City, Inc., and Wave Community Newspapers. He is a prolific published author on bankruptcy issues. Mr. Golubchik is a graduate of the Pepperdine University School of Law, where he received the American Jurisprudence Award in Business Reorganization and Bankruptcy. He was also Vice Chairman of the Moot Court Board and Vice Magistrate of Phi Delta Phi Legal Honor Fraternity. He also graduated from the University of California, Los Angeles, go Bruins, with a Bachelor of Arts in Economics. He's a member of the American California and L.A. Bar Association's Financial Lawyers Conference and L.A. Bankruptcy Firm. He has repeatedly been listed a super lawyer in region-wide peer surveys, an honor bestowed on only 5% of Southern California attorneys. And he is a native of Kiev, Ukraine, and he is fluent in Russian. I'm so excited to add to his illustrious list of credentials. He is now a sought-after guest on the Unlock Your Wealth radio broadcast. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. And wow, you make me sound really good on the radio.
You are fabulously good.
Thank you. But I'm happy to be here.
Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
It was perfect. You're probably one of 10% of people that do it, but you did a great job. It is David Golubchik. The only thing I'd like to clarify is, so my partners wouldn't be upset, the firm name is actually Levine, Neil, Bender, Rankin, and Brill.
Oh, did I miss one?
I think you missed the first guy.
Oh, my apologies to the firm.
No worries.
Well, I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you.
You know, we talk about creating financial independence, and we talk about crisis management, and sometimes catastrophic events beset us. We have the death of an income-producing spouse. We may be in a catastrophic car collision or something that shortcuts our income. Maybe we have all of a sudden a special needs child, the care of an indigent parent, reduction of hours in our workplace, or the elimination of our position entirely. And now we're stuck. We were living in a bubble. We were living in, you know, the keep up with or try to be the Joneses of this millennium. And we're overextended on our debt, clearly. And we don't know what our options are. And we like to create options because financial wellness is a long-term process. And some people, while financial wellness and incorporating all of the ideas that we discuss about financial wellness on this program are all great and well and good, but right now, drastic measures are needed. And we're in a crisis management mode. So I know that bankruptcy, or at least back in the day, before all of this bankruptcy reform, there are certain debts that survive bankruptcy. Can we talk about some of those? I think like student loans and taxes that are owed, those will survive a bankruptcy, right?
Absolutely. With respect to student loans, the recent bankruptcy reform did make it harder. There's still a possibility to discharge student loans, but it is much more difficult than before, which was difficult at the time. With respect to taxes, recent taxes are generally not dischargeable, especially if the taxpayer did not file tax returns. So it is important to timely file tax returns, even if there is an obligation. So there's a statutory period that can pass, so potentially you can discharge the taxes. And then similarly with child support payments, things of that sort, those survive bankruptcy and cannot be discharged.
People get really, and this is a perfect time to have you on the show because this show is take emotion out of the picture this week. That's what this week's key is, and about learning how to make effective decisions and not reactionary decisions based in emotion because we're stressed out and upset. But when people go to consider bankruptcy, they pretty much feel like they're at wit's end. What makes a person eligible to consider bankruptcy as a financial alternative to what's going on in their lives? What would be some of that criteria?
Well, technically, you do not have to be insolvent to file bankruptcy. But the considerations that people take into the factors people take into consideration before filing is cash flow, the ability to make payments, whether credit cards, medical bills, other obligations. And if payments can't be made, the lawsuits that usually start from collection agencies and companies of that sort. So when someone is suing you, not only are you exposed to potential liability and payments in the future, but you have to defend yourself. You have to pay counsel. And at a certain point of time, if you run out of money or don't have the ability to fund it, and you look at your assets to see what's available and what assets are, and the technical term is exempt and non-exempt for bankruptcy purposes, that's when you consider filing a bankruptcy. But what I always tell everyone, bankruptcy should be last resort. You should try to work out your issues or negotiate, and only if that is not successful and you absolutely have to, then you go the bankruptcy route.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you file a bankruptcy, do you have to be completely out of money? What happens if you have IRAs or 401ks and things like that where you have money that's in retirement accounts? What happens to that money if somebody goes to file a bankruptcy? Do they force you to break into that and pay your debts?
They do not. The bankruptcy laws have certain exemptions that individual people are entitled to. There are state exemptions and federal, depending on what jurisdiction you live in. The general rule is with respect to retirement plans, and most of them are ERISA-qualified plans, those are exempt, and if a bankruptcy is filed, those funds are protected. When it comes to an IRA, it's not absolutely protected. That you look at what is reasonably necessary for your living and your survival. So you look at the individual fact situation of the person. But most people have ERISA-qualified plans, which are protected. Additionally, the statutes have more exemptions. For example, if you have a house and you have some equity, which nowadays, unfortunately, is not the case with many people, can exempt a portion of the equity. And there are certain assets. You can exempt some value in a vehicle or tools of the trade. And the idea is if you go through bankruptcy, you get a fresh start, but you don't lose everything. You still can hang on to some of your assets so that you can continue and so that you can survive and thrive after the bankruptcy.
Now, when let's make sure that we don't lose a few people. What does ERISA stand for when we talk about a qualified ERISA-qualified program?
I wish I could tell you, and right now my mind is just not working. It's an acronym. It's a federal
statute. And I used to know this. I was a stockbroker, so shame on me, too.
And I did,
it's Saturday morning. We can write it off as Saturday morning.
Exactly. Plus two little kids that are sick, unfortunately, with the flu season. So,
oh, goodness. My heart goes out to you. There's nothing worse than trying to deal with a sick child. It's so tough. You just want to heal them quickly. So
thank you. But
I
just to help the people out a little bit that may be listening, ERISA is a federal statute that applies to certain retirement plans and investments. And most of the retirement plans out there are ERISA qualified, and it's E period, R period, I period, S period, A period, if anyone wants to look it up.
Great. So, like in Arizona, we have the homestead exemption here. So if it's primary residence and on 2.5 acres or less, we have this thing where you cannot, if you have up to, I think it's like 150,000, I think they changed it. I can't remember if they adjusted the amount. In equity in your property, you're protected against general creditors. Is that something that you see in other states too, where people don't have to use their home equity for that?
That is correct. I'm based in California, and we have similar statutes. And generally in California for homestead exemptions, if you're a single person, you can protect $50,000. If you have dependents, you can protect $75,000. And if you're over 65 years old and I believe disabled or disabled, you can protect up to $125,000 in value. But there has to be value above the mortgage in order to protect it, because if it's not there, there's nothing to protect. But all states have similar statutes. There are states.
So if there's nothing to protect, they can't. Does that mean that they can still go after you and attach your property if they get a judgment?
They don't if you go through bankruptcy, because if there's nothing to protect, there's nothing to attach.
Okay.
So in a bankruptcy situation, if you have a mortgage that's as high or higher than the value of your home, there's nothing for anyone else to go after and attach.
Okay. So can you file a bankruptcy and be able to keep your home and stay in the property but expunge your other debts?
Yes, that's generally the case. When it comes to Chapter 7s, and what we're talking here is primarily for individual and usually Chapter 7 cases, the way the process works is when a bankruptcy is commenced, an independent Chapter 7 trustee is appointed who takes over effectively the assets. And his job is to take a look at the assets, such as the home, and determine whether there is value that he can realize, because his job is to convert non-cash assets into cash to be distributed to creditors. So he looks at your home and takes a look at to see what is the value above your mortgage, above your exemption, and also above the cost of sale, because whether you're in or out of bankruptcy, there are broker's fees, there are closing costs that have to be paid. And if the trustee determines that there is insufficient value to justify him hiring a lawyer and going through the process, there's nothing for him to do with a home, and the home will survive bankruptcy. If, for example, the trustee sees that after the mortgage, after the exemption, there are a few hundred thousand dollars in value, according to his broker, he has the right to market the property and sell the property, but he has to pay all of the obligations to the mortgage and the obligations to the homestead exemption that the person claimed before taking any money for creditors. So it all depends on the valuation of the property, and it's whether it's home or automobile or other assets.
So for the sake of this discussion, let's say I can make my mortgage payment, but I can't afford all of my credit cards. I ran them up, and now I'm not able to service them because, you know, my hours got cut or I got placed to a different part in the company and my income went down, and I can still afford my mortgage, but I can't afford my other debts. And if I don't have any equity in my home, or I have very little equity that wouldn't allow that, would I be allowed to keep my home through the bankruptcy and then get rid of the...
Sorry, if the trustee takes a look at the value of your home and the mortgage and the exemption and determines that there is very little value above it, where it's not worth his while, most likely he will not do anything with the home, and the home will survive and you can stay there. One issue for individuals to consider when you say, I make enough money to make the home payments but not all the credit card payments. Part of this bankruptcy reform, which happened end of 2005, is there's a means test for individuals. So people should speak to a lawyer before filing any sort of a bankruptcy, because there are factors that have to be considered, such as whether your expenses are reasonable in relation to your income. And if you make a lot but you live a good life and your expenses are too high, the trustee or the Office of the United States Trustee, which is part of the Department of Justice and oversees all bankruptcies, has the right to come into court and say, Judge, this person is leading too good a life, and if they're to do that, they should pay something back to the creditors from their income, rather than just enjoying a nice home and not paying any other obligations. So there are other factors that people will have to consider before going through a bankruptcy process.
Okay, what about chronic bankruptcy filers? Some people use this as a personal financial plan, and then they file again as soon as they're eligible. I heard a statistic years back, and I don't know what it is now, but back then in the 90s, it was 54% of people who file bankruptcy will file again.
There are quite a few people that do that. In California, where I'm located, the numbers of legitimate filers who refile is substantially less than that amount. And I think I saw this statistic maybe around 20 to 30%, because you're allowed to get a discharge once every 6 years. What happens often is there are people whose, for example, home is in foreclosure. And what they do is they transfer a portion of the interest in a home to somebody who files bankruptcy, and then the bank has to come in and get permission from the bankruptcy court to do a foreclosure. And just before a foreclosure, another fractional interest is transferred to someone else, and there's serial filings by different people, but with respect to the same property. And people should be aware that the Department of Justice that I mentioned earlier that oversees this process refers matters to the FBI, and it's a serious bankruptcy crime involving prison and fines. But unfortunately, that does happen quite a bit, at least out here in California.
Wow. I couldn't even imagine that, but I guess it goes on.
It does.
I mean, I see all these TV shows with all these other weird crimes that I figured I can't believe people do, but...
And it's not really the individual's or the homeowner's fault. Their home is in foreclosure, and they have someone that contacts them and says, I'm a foreclosure specialist, and I can save your home. Do what I tell you to do. And the homeowner doesn't really know that what he's doing or she's doing is wrong, or that part of the house is being transferred to someone else. You're basically giving it away. But it is a serious problem.
Is the homeowner culpable for any of that, whether they were knowing? Are they really considered a victim, or are they a party to the crime?
You know, at least in California, the judges are very sympathetic and understand, because they have the people come into the courtroom and tell their story, and they really hear the individuals out. And you can often tell who's the victim and who's the predator, if you will. So I think the judges, at least where I practice, have been pretty good about being helpful to people and doing what they can to avoid anything that should not occur.
Now, with the bankruptcy reform, I know that there was a Chapter 7 and a Chapter 13 before that. Is there still that for personal bankruptcies?
Yes. Chapter 7 and Chapter 13 are still around. And technically for personal bankruptcies, there's also Chapter 11, which is generally a business reorganization. But there are some individuals of sufficient wealth or asset holdings who are effectively like a business, and you could also do a reorganization through the Chapter 11 process.
Oh, really? For personal stuff?
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Now, with the 7... are all of your debts expunged and then you don't have to pay anybody back versus the 13 or the 11, or do you have to pay some of it back? What are the differences between the 7, 11, and the 13?
Well, a 7 is primarily a liquidation where you file a bankruptcy and you take some of the exemptions that we talked about earlier, and whatever is left over, the trustee has the right to convert it to cash, sell effectively, and distribute to creditors. 13 is a small reorganization for people that have a steady paycheck, but there are limits up to how much debt you can have on a Chapter 13. And then a Chapter 11 is a reorganization, or it could be a liquidation without any limits. The difference is that with respect to dischargeability, in Chapter 7 and Chapter 11, they're very similar discharge laws. We talked earlier about certain obligations that don't get discharged, such as child support, certain taxes, student loans. That would still apply. Plus, a person or a creditor has the right to file a lawsuit against the person in bankruptcy alleging that their obligation, the debt owed to that creditor, should survive bankruptcy and shouldn't be discharged. And there are several laws that apply to that, such as if you've obtained financing through fraud or engaged in willful and malicious injury. There are, I believe, 15 different subcategories that describe the various ways that a debt can survive bankruptcy. That's why it's important to talk to counsel. As to Chapter 13 cases, there's an additional level of protections where you can discharge certain obligations that you would not be able to discharge in Chapter 7 or Chapter 11. So there's an advantage of Chapter 13, but the problem with Chapter 13, as I stated earlier, there are limits. So if you have an individual that has $2 million in obligations, that person would not qualify for a Chapter 13. He or she would have to go through a Chapter 11 process or a Chapter 7 if it's a liquidation.
So now that we talked about that bigger number, let's talk about that. How do these people that, you know, live high on the hog and fly around in their personal jets and things get to do bankruptcy and appear, at least on the surface, to come out unscathed?
Well, it really is about where the various assets are located. Very often with people that live the high life, they have their assets in various entities. They maybe create a corporation here that has some real estate holding and limited liability company there that has the jet, which is part of the lease. So no one entity has everything that the creditors can go after. And there's something called bankruptcy remote entities, which are created that have a particular valuable asset but no debt, because debts go on the other entities. But if a bankruptcy is filed, creditors have the ability to look at the vast array of assets, not only the assets of the entity or the person or the company in bankruptcy, but also related parties, related entities, to investigate whether there is any wrongful conduct. And under certain circumstances, the bankruptcy laws allow a creditor to reach out of the bankruptcy and bring assets from another source into the bankruptcy to be repaid to creditors. It's a substantive consolidation. That's a technical term. But you can bring other entities in so that there is a bigger pot of funds or assets that are available to distribute to creditors. Now, often the way they survive bankruptcy unscathed have to do with negotiations. There are creditors who still have faith in the person in bankruptcy and believe that once they come out, assuming they come out strong, they'll be able to make the money the way they did sometime in the past and repay the obligations. And in bankruptcy, it's unlike litigation where everyone fights. Very often in bankruptcy, it's a resolution process. It's a goal-oriented approach where you try to make something out of a difficult situation, and everyone understands that the only way you can do that is reach a settlement. And a settlement, for example, in a Chapter 11 case or a Chapter 13 bankruptcy, which are reorganizations, results in an approval of what's called a plan of reorganization. And the plan dictates how everyone is going to basically coexist with each other after the bankruptcy, how obligations are going to be repaid in the future, how the person is going to operate, how much money the person is going to receive from his company, and what assets will still remain, which assets will be sold, and so forth and so forth. But bankruptcy is very goal-oriented negotiation process, unlike other litigation.
Now, if someone has assets and then transfer those assets right before they file bankruptcy to try to save some things, that's considered criminal activity, right?
I don't think that is criminal activity, unless their particular jurisdiction has a criminal statute. The first thing that pops into my mind is it's called fraudulent conveyance, and that's in most states, that's what the statute is called. And it doesn't necessarily involve fraud the way everyone thinks of fraud. If you transfer something to somebody else to hide the asset from creditors, that's fraud. And at least in California, we have a 4-year look-back period. So if you file just before bankruptcy, don't count on it being safe. It's going to come back. But fraudulent conveyance can also involve if you transfer something or sell something for less than its fair value. For example, you have a home that's worth $1 million and you sell it for $500,000 and then file bankruptcy. Well, the trustee in bankruptcy can come to court and say, "Judge, this is a $1 million house. $500,000 was not a fair value. Maybe $1 million does not have to be paid. Maybe the number should be $800,000, but it certainly is not $500,000. So I have the right to go after the buyer and bring back the house or the value of the house." And that is routinely used in bankruptcy when situations like this arise.
Wow, to reverse a transaction, a real estate transaction, that's pretty heavy duty if they can go back and do that.
Correct. And you can look back 4 years. So people that try to do pre-bankruptcy planning, it's kind of tough to plan more than 4 years before the filing.
Yeah, that's an awful long time. So that's interesting. So if somebody was contemplating bankruptcy, what would be items that they could do a personal inventory to see maybe bankruptcy might be right for me? What would some of the things that would make someone eligible for bankruptcy be? Can you give us a little list?
Anyone really is eligible for bankruptcy. As I started in the beginning of the program, you do not have to be insolvent. But the best thing to do initially is put together a good list of your personal assets and obligations just to see what is the world of assets and debts of the person. And then sit down with counsel and find out what portion of the assets are exempt, to find out what is available after the exemptions and after the mortgages, to see what would happen if a bankruptcy is filed. And that way you can play the scenario out before filing so you have a better idea. But the first part is to really prepare a good financial statement that lists everything. Even if you may have a guarantee of someone else's debt, usually people don't think of that for their own personal financial statement. But in bankruptcy, it's better to be over-inclusive and include debts that may not even be liquidated debts that will come to fruition in the future. But you still want to have everything in there, because in bankruptcy, if you don't list an obligation, you don't get a discharge as to that obligation. So that is important.
And so many people forget about that. I know that when I was in mortgage lending, people would apply, and I said, "Well, you don't qualify. You've got this, this, and this, and your ratios don't work." And they're like, "Oh, well, I just co-signed for my kid. That's not my debt. So my
exactly.
kid could have a car." And they've done that for, like, each kid, and so they've got 3 car loans on their credit. And I'm like, well, but it doesn't look like that. So you have to go and get documentation to prove that they've been making payments for at least a year in order to get a lender to overlook a debt like that. And so many people co-sign, and they don't realize that co-signing isn't what people think it is. It's not like they're going to come after you if the other one defaults. You have co-obligated yourself to that debt. So you're, you know, joint and several liability, people never understand. And so they're fully responsible for the full debt, not just half of it or whatever portion their kid doesn't pay. And I think a lot of people forget that.
Absolutely. And one good way to at least ensure that the process is as thorough as possible is to order a credit report. I believe you can now order a free credit report once a year, and that should have at least the majority of your obligations.
Yes, at least all of them that you have borrowed from that report and participate in the credit reporting process. Not every lender does that, but
correct.
It'll help you catch those that fall through the cracks that you won't remember about, that's for sure.
Right.
Well, we're coming to the close of our segment. What parting words would you like to leave our listeners with regard to bankruptcy?
If many people call me and say, I'm experiencing financial trouble, I want to file bankruptcy, and what I tell everybody, and I think it's important for listeners to understand that there are ways to try to negotiate and resolve issues without bankruptcy, without affecting your credit report for 7 to 10 years, however long bankruptcy stays on it. What I tell everyone is bankruptcy should be the last resort. And if there's a way to resolve your issues without it, that's definitely the preferable alternative. But if you do file bankruptcy, there are lots of bankruptcy petition preparers out there who are not lawyers, who don't know the laws. Find a competent lawyer that you can talk to and that can tell you what you can and cannot do so that you don't have criminal exposure in addition to various civil exposure.
Great. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you, do you have a website with some of the resources or articles or books that you've written?
Yes, we do have a website, and the website is www.lnbrb.com, which are my firm's initials for Levine, Neal, Bender, Rankin and Brill, and we're located in Century City, Los Angeles County.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking time away from your kids on a Saturday to join our broadcast. We sure are grateful for the information you shared with us about bankruptcy. And for those of you who are driving around and unable to write his website down or couldn't discern the initials, you can always surf over to our website at www.unlockyourwealth.com and always find links from our show guests. Now, folks, guess what time it is? Yes, it is that time in the broadcast for our Millionaire Minute. This segment is where we crawl into the heads of top millionaire thinkers and put out 60 seconds of tools you can incorporate into your life right now today. And from neuro-linguistic programming, we have the Lucky Seven. These are 3 keys to success and 4 steps to implementing your success. And the first of the 3 keys is simply know what you want. That seems like a logical thing. Know what you want. So many people don't have a clear picture of what it is that they want. First, you have to know what you want. And number 2, you have to know how you'll know when you get there. What will it look like? What will it feel like? What will it sound like? How will you know when you know that you're there? And then 3rd in the 3 keys to success, you must vary your approach until you accomplish and get where you want to go. So those are the 3 keys to success. The 4 steps is, number 1, know where you are. You have to know where you were beginning in order to create the map. Number 2, know where you want to go. What's the destination? What is it that you want? Number 3, make a plan. And then this is the tough one where everybody gets hung up. And number 4, follow the plan. Everybody is great at planning. Few execute. And that's what separates the millionaires from the rest of us, is execution. So follow the plan. So the three keys: know what you want, know how you know when you get there, and vary your approach until. And the four steps to success: know where you are, know where you want to go, make a plan, and follow the plan. Now fully and completely integrate these habits now. See yourself in this way. Look forward to the future and watch how differently people will respond to you in this way. Imagine yourself with these successes already. Create some affirmations with these tools as well to reinforce what you've just integrated into your personality. And that's your Millionaire Minute. We will be right back with the second half of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Stay tuned for more right after this.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Karen Gurm here. You probably recognize me as your segment host for News by the Numbers. Did you know I am also one of the certified NLP practitioners and a financial coach here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation? The most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. 1-866-966-9420, or visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Here I am. Oh, you thought I wouldn't show up? You thought you could take your credit cards, live beyond your means, spend all you want, not budget a plan, and avoid me? I'm your worst nightmare, baby. Do you know who I am? My first name is Bad, last name is Dad.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth radio program. No Mr. Bad Debt here. No, we are kicking him to the curb. We are learning tools, tips, tricks, techniques, and all sorts of resources we have within ourselves to kick this man to the curb so we can become financially independent. We are not going to serve our debt. We are going to be in control of it. And that's what we are going to get to. But first, we have that ever-popular segment.
It's a need you gotta fill. It's news you gotta know. And news by the numbers is your favorite part of the show. Yeah.
Yes, it's that time for news by the numbers. Karen Durham, our illustrious segment host, fabulous radio show producer, editor of the e-zine, is here live and in person to deliver us a synopsis of this week's stock market activity. Karen, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited you decided to join us yet again.
Of course. This week, Heather, I do have some better news.
Yay!
Stocks post modest gains as job losses slow, according to the New York Associated Press. Investors were undaunted by a surprisingly weak jobs report and found enough positive news to nudge stocks higher Friday. News that the nation's unemployment rate rose above 10% last month for the first time in 26 years didn't derail the stock market's strong gains in the week, which lifted major indexes more than 3%. The rise in joblessness to 10.2% in October, while bad news for the economy, reassured some investors that the Federal Reserve will have to hold interest rates low for some time. That tends to weaken demand for the dollar, which in turn gives a boost to stocks. When the dollar is weaker, U.S. goods are cheaper for buyers overseas. Companies that do business overseas also get a profit gain when their earnings are translated back into dollars. Safe haven assets like treasuries were mixed, oil prices tumbled, and gold topped $1,100 an ounce for the first time. Gold benefits when investors are worried about a weak dollar and inflation. Meanwhile, General Electric rose 6% after analysts raised their ratings on the stock. It was the biggest gainer among the 30 Dow industrials. The jobs report bodes poorly for consumer spending, a key driver of the economy. The Labor Department said employers cut 190,000 jobs last month, fewer than 219,000 jobs lost in September, but more than forecast. The market has been expecting unemployment to top 10% before peaking. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose just under 17.5 points, or 0.2%, to 10,023.42, boosting its gain for the week to 311 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 index rose over 2.5 points, or 0.3%, to 1,069.3, while the NASDAQ Composite Index rose 7.12, or 0.3%, to 2,112.44. For the week, the Dow and the S&P 500 index gained over 3%, while the NASDAQ rose 3.3%. And that is your news by the numbers.
Why, thank you. I'm glad we had a stroke of good luck because I was getting nervous there. We were having a lot of negative information, and I was getting nervous. Although
I didn't want to not start the show.
Well, yes, because we want people to look forward to hearing from you. No, here she comes again with more bad news. So,
right?
Didn't the stock market realize your reputation was at stake? I mean, come on.
I know, seriously.
Yeah, so thank God they relented for you at least this week. So, not that we want bad news next week, but at least you interrupted the pattern, so that's good. So this week, we are talking about taking emotion out of the picture. This is a difficult task because as human beings, we're extremely emotive. We want to be passionate about life, about loving one another, about our likes and our dislikes. It's just the way we are. It's the way we're made. We are built to feel emotion. But sometimes, as we all know, when those emotional chemicals kick in, we do things that may not always be in our best interest because this emotion is flipping us into a fight-or-flight mode. And when that switch flips, when those hormones get raging through our body and we make that decision to fight or flee, all of a sudden, all of our decision-making skills from that point forward are disabled because now we're just in a survival mode. And so many times we get that way when it comes to our finances. We get really upset. We get defensive. We either punish ourselves. We lash out at others. And it doesn't do us any good to do that, to make decisions from an ineffective or weak position. And it's just the way we're built. We're chemical people physiologically, and we're emotional people, and we feel. And especially when we make money, we are emotionally attached to the money we make because we put our blood, sweat, and tears in it. And so we feel levels of entitlement, deserving, and we have all of these emotions caught up in the money that we've made, and it can materially affect the way we spend based on the patterns that we were set up with from our parents, on what we learned from our parents about money. And that sometimes sets us up for failure if our parents had their own issues about money. And I know that my mother had some issues about money. My father, and I grew up divorced in a divorced household. And so my father always lived in another state. He was never around. But I always remembered my father saying, I can manage multimillion-dollar budgets. And he was fabulous at it. His company, he worked for the same company all his life before he passed away. And his company would move him to the ailing plants. And he would be the turnaround guy. He was the one they went to right the ship if it would wander off course. And he was fabulous at that. But he would say, and I can manage a multimillion-dollar budget, but I cannot manage my own checkbook. And that's because we get so emotionally attached to our money. And because we have some emotional predispositions behavior-wise that make us feel entitled to spend a certain way or not save and self-sabotage. So this week's key, we're going to talk all about that detachment and how do we make more effective decisions financially. And I'd like to check in with our Unlock Your Wealth protege, Nikki Payne, so we can see how she's doing. Nikki, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello.
Now, I know that the last couple of weeks we've had some challenges because we've had a lot of things happening to us, and we've responded emotionally to some of those things. Let's talk about what's happened since you last joined us on the broadcast.
Let's see. Major development was the fact that I got laid off from my job. And I tried to apply for a private loan consolidation for all my student loans, but my parents don't even qualify to be co-signers with me. So I'm SOL on that. But I did manage to contact two of the four student lenders, and I guess I'm eligible for unemployment deferment as long as I could prove that I'm actively seeking employment by printing up my profile on Monster.com or Career Builder, which means I only have my one. Wells Fargo is being stingy. They are very stingy. They don't want to help at all. They don't even provide me with options. There's just no way around it. So I have to prepare myself for for making the student loan payments in January for my Wells Fargo loan. And then my other, the fourth one, I've already been making payments on that one without a problem. So, I mean, I kind of feel more calmer, I guess you could say, since two of the four lenders are willing to work with me as far as getting unemployment deferment paperwork in.
Well, then that was one of our biggest hurdles, was trying to get those debts under control. So, in a way, being laid off was kind of a blessing in disguise.
I'm looking at it that way because I think I could find myself a better job. I already applied for like six jobs yesterday, including a news blogger position for LA Weekly, which I think I'd be perfect for since I'm such a blogger.
And that's a talent. Blogging is not like regular journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And you are very good at expressing yourself. You are a great communicator. That's one of the things that Karen and I have noticed in working with you and crafting your pitches and things, is that you're really able to articulate yourself and endear others to your position. So I'm excited about that. So that's one good thing for us. Now, I know we had a potential setback, and I didn't follow up with you about whether or not you were able to get it resolved, but we did negotiate to get a deferment on your auto payment, and we had negotiated 2 months, but they only sent you one. Was that a clerical error, or did they change
their mind? They said it was a clerical error, so they're supposed to send me new paperwork. They said, don't send in anything, just wait till you get this updated paperwork, but they said it was a clerical error on their part.
Good. So
I'm still waiting to receive the paperwork.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And so in keeping with today's key, do you feel better about maybe that it was a mistake? I know that the day that it happened, you seemed a little bit overwhelmed with everything that was going on. So you sound much more calm.
I feel calmer because I got a lot done yesterday considering I'm unemployed. I was able to write a blog, post it on three different ones, like the same. I kind of cross-promote all my stuff, so I wrote a blog entry and posted it on three different sites that I'm managing, like LA, the Examiner, and then both of my blogs, a personal blog, and then the website I'm working on. So I was able to do that. I worked on I'm doing this Rockstar for Success system from Craig Duzwalt, and it's like a 30-day program to writing a book, and everyone's telling me, like, this is your time now. This is a blessing in disguise. You have the time. Just do it. It's like I'm a very sporadic person by nature, so it's like a 30-day program, like spend an hour doing this today, spend an hour doing this to the next day. So I got down my concept, my title, my subtitle, and I have a mentor that I'm working with who's acting like a manager kind of helping motivate me and keep my spirits up through this whole process. So my goal is by the end of the year to have a book finished and completed so that I could start pitching it to publishers or something.
That's so great. You sound a lot different. And, you know, one of the things that I used to always hear when I would be beset with a bunch of challenges, I remember one of my mentors saying, Heather, it's like eating elephant. And I'm like, well, yeah, like I got all this stuff. It's pretty big. And the way to eat elephant is just one bite at a time. So it sounds like you're really moving forward and working on just taking one bite at a time.
Yeah, I got a lot done. I applied
really
for six jobs. One of them was in person. So I went, you know, retail job, but it was a more respectable retail job. It was Victoria's Secret. I went because, you know, they dress nice when they work there. And I even followed up. Most people just drop off an application. I was like, can I get the name of your hiring manager? Is there a way I could follow up? And so I had the employee write down the phone number and the name of the person so I could call and follow up on review of the application, because they are, in fact, hiring. It's just a matter of being persistent and saying, hey, look at me. I'm here.
Oh, that's totally the right attitude. You know, it's so important, especially because, you know, it is the holiday season, so there's going to be a lot of seasonal opportunities to get you kind of over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'd like to ask you about is yesterday I sought out one of my mentors in neurolinguistic programming, and we had an opportunity to do somewhat of a different type of coaching session with Bill. And I was just kind of wondering what kind of feedback you had. Let's kind of talk about that. What did you think of Bill initially when I first brought him on the phone? Because I didn't quite tell you. I kind of threw him in as a surprise.
Yeah. He was pleasant, a friendly personality. I wasn't intimidated by him at all or anything.
Good. I didn't know if I threw you off guard.
No, it was a nice spin. I like being surprised.
Good. Well, I felt like he could help guide you and also assist me and kind of give me a perspective that maybe I wasn't seeing when we were talking. And I thought that between the time we first started talking with Bill and by the time we got off the phone with him, that that you seemed like you were completely in a different spin. So I'm glad you took the time to work with him yesterday, because he's really amazing in coaching, in the coaching field. And he's been a guest here on the show, and we've done some great work with him on the show. So let's talk about what he was looking at and what he was reinforcing with you on some of the things that you as you look back on yesterday, what specifically sticks out in your mind about your conversation?
The fact that he was positive, I guess you could say. Like, I don't know, he just had a different way of, I don't know, for me personally, some people just have a different way of speaking to me. So it was almost like, he had the tonality of, like, my best friend, I guess you could say. And she's the most, like, loving, caring, nurturing person that I know. So I guess that's how he came off, very positive and supportive, like, highlighting, like, you know, I hear, highlighting the good things more than the bad things, I guess you could say.
Great. And that's what's going to get us through, is focusing on those things that you do well and do more of it.
Yeah.
There was a book, you know, now Discover Your Strengths, and so many people approach life in a funky kind of manner, and they say, well, you know, you're only as strong as your weakest link, and so many people focus on their weaknesses, and exactly what we talked about last week is find your strengths, identify your weaknesses, and if it's not something that you want to learn, delegate it. Focusing on your weaknesses is only going to make them more apparent, and like Bill shared yesterday, you're going to be filtering for those responses. So you're going to be looking for all of the things that you can't do or that you're not doing well, and that's what you're going to be focusing on. And what I liked what Bill said to you was to focus on the things that you do well and do more of it. And so you taking action and taking charge and responsibility for what's going on in your life and not being a victim but focusing on how great things are and how many options you truly have was something significant. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about is I found this very interesting that he kind of identified, but because of our lack of time together, we weren't able to explore it. And I wanted to talk to you about receiving and feeling good about yourself, because that was one of the things that he identified as something that you were struggling with when he wanted you to repeat the saying about everything has a purpose and a reason and it served me. And you kind of struggled with that, and you didn't like the word purpose. And I was wondering if there was ever a time that you can think of, either in the most recent past or maybe further back to a childhood experience, where you felt like it wasn't okay for you to receive?
I don't really know.
It seemed yesterday like you were struggling a bit with allowing yourself to win. That was just my perspective on things.
Uh-huh.
That as we were getting you to see yourself in the moment when he was talking about in the coffee shop as you were empowered and writing and feeling successful, that you almost seemed like you didn't want to let that happen. And I was wondering if there was some sort of...
I guess it's the wording, because I like to use my own wording for things. So I don't know. I have a problem with people telling me what to do, I guess. I don't know. I just didn't like the wording, because in my head I have my own wording, and when to say something like that doesn't feel right to me.
Okay.
And it sounds like too godly, like purpose. Like it sounds too godly and religious, and I...
But everybody has a purpose, right?
Yeah, I have a purpose, but I don't say it like that.
Okay,
I'm more of everything happens for a reason. I don't know what that reason is, but I know it's for the better, for the better good of myself and mankind.
Okay, so let's go with that for a minute. What if you feel... since you don't like the word purpose, what word would you put in there?
Meaning.
Okay. All right. But currently, with your current wording, how has that worked out for you in the past?
It keeps me passionate.
Okay. But if you just change that one word from meaning to purpose, because you're worthy of a purpose, aren't you?
Yeah.
Would you agree to that?
Yeah.
So if we just change that one word from meaning to purpose and said everything has a purpose and a reason and it serves me, how would that be different for you?
I don't really know. I'm just stubborn.
And how does being stubborn serve you?
It serves me because I'm out of it about what I want. I know what I want, and I'm going to get what I want because I'm going to work for it. I'm going to do everything I need to get it.
Okay. But on some
I've never not had anything I didn't want because I've always worked hard for it.
Okay.
It's just a struggle to get there, the journey to get there, but the end result's still the same, and I always end up achieving my end result. It may take some time, but, hey, patience is a virtue.
So, as we look at this, okay, because we're here because of the choices that we've made, and I'm wondering if stubborn and passionate are not in congruence with each other, because I think you're a very passionate person, but I'm wondering if your stubbornness and your unwillingness to change a simple word.
I mean, I can say it, not a problem, but to feel it is a different story. It doesn't feel right to me. I feel uncomfortable saying something that doesn't feel right to me. It just sounds too forced. I can say it, but I won't say it with any passion.
What is keeping you from saying it with any passion? Because you personally didn't create the word?
Yeah, I'd rather say my own thing.
That's kind of what's gotten you into the pickle you're in right now, hasn't it?
Saying my own thing?
Right.
I would disagree.
Okay, so tell me, what is it that you disagree with my statement?
I don't get it. I'm confused. I'm lost.
Okay. If there is a purpose, if everything has a purpose and a reason and it serves you, and that's a general...
See, I don't like the word serve. Maybe purpose is okay. I don't like the word serve because I think serve the Lord, and it doesn't sound like a non-secular statement to me. It sounds too religious, and I don't like any religious tonality to it. I don't like the word serve.
What is
purpose? It's either purpose or the word serve. I just don't like the verbiage.
Okay, so explain to me about what in the word serve doesn't work for you, because it's not a religious term. The word serve is a secular term. when you go to the
It sounds like a
store.
Servant, like a lesser. It sounds like an inferior word.
Is that something that you're projecting onto the word? Because the word doesn't have that in its definition.
I guess so. I just don't like the word. I have a reason and purpose and meaning to my life, and it does me well.
Okay. That there's value in the word choices. Neurolinguistic programming is modeling excellence, and those that have and exude excellence understand this concept. And this is what, you know, we couldn't explore yesterday, is that everything has a purpose and a reason, and it serves me. Now, it's serving you whether you agree with the word or not.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So
I don't disagree with the statement. I just don't like the statement.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that just in your inherent nature to be rebellious and want to...
Pretty much. I like to be my own person and do my own thing. I don't like to do what everyone else is doing or say what everyone else is saying. I'm an individualist.
Right, but this phrase isn't about creativity or an expression. This is about understanding a concept that exists for everyone.
I understand the concept perfectly well.
Okay. So how can we accept that? You know, what's the hang up with?
I can accept it. Don't expect me to say that every day. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's some sort of a predisposition to servitude that you have a hang up with. When I have a real estate client in my office and I create options for him to invest, I'm serving my client. I'm in servitude to him. When I coach people, I'm in servitude to them. I'm in servitude to you in helping facilitate your financial independence and your health and wellness. I'm in servitude to you right now. So how do we change our definition of the word serve so you're willing to accept that?
Serve means help. It helps me. I like the word help better than serve.
But helping and serving are different.
Help, according to this, it's a synonym. It's a definition. I looked it up on thesource.com. The definition of serve is to aid, help, or supply.
But to serve...
is to help people.
It's not just... Well, but help doesn't have remuneration. Servitude can have remuneration. I can get paid by my client to serve them.
Assist. So, it's assisting people.
Okay. So if everything has a purpose and a reason and it serves you, like when we sit and have our conversations and we go through a coaching session and I give you tools and resources that you didn't have before, I have served you. Does that make sense? The value
it, to
you
me,
derive,
you're helping me. It, to me, you're not serving me. You're helping me. You are assisting
right.
me.
Okay. But I've served
when I think
you.
Serve, I think a servant. I think slave.
And why is that? Have you been enslaved before?
I don't know. Probably.
So how can we, if you just looked it up and you saw help as a synonym, you're agreeing that servitude is not slavery, right?
Sure.
If you just looked it up. So let's incorporate that word. You know, let's say everything has a purpose and a reason and it serves me.
Okay.
Can we say that? So let's say that.
Everything has a reason and purpose, and it serves me.
Now, can you buy into that? Can you believe that?
Sure.
So all of the things that have gone on have led you to where you are today. And you're empowered by things, because now instead of focusing on our weaknesses and what we don't have, we're now filtering for all of these great options and possibilities. And you have taken action in response to these stimulus, where initially we were getting overwhelmed with it, but now we're charged up by it. And all these little successes that you've had, I mean, that is a huge deal to not just submit an application, but the fact that you went into that retail store and you asked for who the hiring manager is, and now you have the phone number. I mean, that's so great. And now you can take and build on that. I mean, you're not just going through the motions to try to seem like, okay, well, here we are. You're responding in a different way. You took that information, and one of my favorite words is responsibility. And the reason why I like this word is because what it truly means, but so many people don't understand what responsibility is. People get it confused with obligation. And an obligation is something that you have to do. Responsibility is your ability to respond to a particular stimulus or an event. And what I like about the word responsibility is it's your ability to respond. And it's very careful and thought out versus the word reactionary. And that plays totally into today's key, which is take emotion out of the picture. Because when our body starts dumping all of these chemicals, when we react emotionally, we cannot respond. We are chemically shutting off that part of our brain that gives us the ability to be rational. And without being able to respond, because this is ability to respond, because chemically we've been shut off, now we react. And when we react in two ways, fight or flight. So we're only going to be able to fight or flee. And so some of us who cannot accept responsibility or get overwhelmed with dealing with the situations that arise for us, we kind of run away. We pretend like it's not happening. It's not me. It's not my fault. I can't respond because these chemicals are making us feel in fear, threatened, angered, saddened. Something is going on that's being triggered from something that may have happened to us when we were little kids, but has sent us running away from what our issues are. Or the opposite happens, and we fight. So when we're confronted with an issue and a stimulus, all of a sudden we are just clawing tooth and nail, and anyone that gets in our way, even if they're trying to help us, we're ripping their heads off, we're being defensive, we're being argumentative, because we are not able to respond. Our ability to respond has been shut off. And, you know, again, stimulus, response. And when all that hormone gets dumped in, it's either fight or flight. And so now all we know, instead of running away, is I got to retaliate. This person's coming after me, and I'm just going to be vicious, and I'm going to go until I shred them to pieces. And then we usually exacerbate situations and make them worse. Now, sometimes our emotions get us into trouble, but anytime we respond emotionally, it's certainly not going to get us out of trouble. So the importance of this key is to take emotion out of the decision-making picture. We want to be passionate, but we must keep our passions in perspective. If we want to be passionate about making money, we want to be passionate. Some interesting challenges have happened to you, Nikki, along the way that have created these situations. And now you are learning to dissociate your emotions and not react, but effectively respond. And instead of saying, poor me, why me, all this is, I'm working so hard and this stuff just keeps happening to me. Now you're responding, you're filtering, and you're taking action. You're taking qualified, well-thought-out action and not allowing all of those hormones to dump in your body and just flip out and either flee or fight, but you're saying, no, I'm going to turn this into a positive. One of the toughest challenges that we have had is what do we do with these student loans, because they're going to come due, and we don't have the resources to pay for them. Well, what do you know? A blessing in disguise, manna from heaven. The one thing that was most important to us was our income, and we just lost that. But in that loss, we have found a new opportunity. Now we're able to forbear and defer payment on those loans that was going to keep us out of our goal-setting abilities and achieving our goals. Now that we don't have those obligations, now we can start saving to move out and create that living opportunity that we couldn't before, because now we're going to be able to have resources when we get our new job that we can have that money go to creating a place to live where we weren't going to have a place to live a minute ago. So we've been able to We've been able to circumvent the dumping of hormone and to be more logical and be able to respond. And if you just break apart the word and say it a little slowly, instead of saying, I have a responsibility, we don't have responsibilities. We have obligations. And we have the ability to respond to those in a variety of ways. One of the most fabulous things that has happened to you, Nikki, since you've been able to move your emotions aside and look at your situation objectively, your ability to respond to it has exponentially increased. And instead of being without resources and without options, you have now been able to pull that mask, that veil of emotion off, and see clearly for the first time. And now you have created so many options and so many great choices for yourself. And I'm so proud of you, because this has been one of probably your biggest hurdles, is to be able to respond instead of react. And this is so huge for your growth, because now what we filter for, we find. And now that we have pulled these negative emotion goggles off and have been able to see clearly, we see that the horizon isn't dark and abysmal, but it's filled with color and opportunity, and it's bright. And now you can choose how you respond. And choice is so important, because now all of the things that you're passionate about, your writing, your expression, your creativity, can now be properly remunerated. Your talents can be rewarded, because now you can go seek out the opportunities that lie ahead, and you can do this with excitement and enthusiasm that you didn't have before, because we were clouded with all of this emotion of all of the things and the choices that we had made that led us to where we are. But all of a sudden, we've been able to dump all of that. It's so great to be able to champion ourselves for some of the things that we've been able to do. And I remember how disappointed you were when you got that piece of paper from your auto company when they said, oh, it's only 1 month. And I said, wait, we negotiated too. And I know you were so upset about that. I said, no, that has to be a clerical error, because why would they do that? And you just reacted as soon as you saw that piece of paper, instead of saying, you know what, people make mistakes. Things happen. Computers are only as smart as the people that are programming them. And, you know, human error, you know, you type a wrong thing, you know, these fabulous little wheels on the mouse that make things spin by can make selections that you thought you made change to something else. And, you know, the miracles of modern technology are also some of our foibles. But now, as we see, all we did was we made a simple phone call and found out that, yes, in fact, what we had negotiated, they were still extending the offer, then it was a clerical error. And so taking those goggles off, take those negative emotion goggles off, stop filtering for all of the crap that you've been filtering for that's beset your life, and everybody can do this. And just take and imagine, if you will, if you've ever skied or ridden a motorcycle and or swam and wore goggles, imagine and put in your imaginary, close your eyes, and imagine you have goggles on your face, and put all of that garbage that you've been filtering for, all that negativity that you have had in your life, all of those things that you keep seeing that say, oh, Murphy's lives in my family, Murphy's Law is me, anything that can go wrong will, and just put all of that in your these goggles that are on your face, and just everybody, just close your eyes. If you're not driving, if you're driving, don't close your eyes. But if you're in a position where you can put these imaginary goggles, you can see them on your face, and put all of this garbage that you've been filtering for, all of this negativity, and then just reach up with both hands and see all of this stuff that's floating and circling in these goggles, and just rip them off your face and throw it in the trash can. We are done with all of the negative garbage, because every time we start getting all of that hormone dumping into us and all of that negativity swirling around us, all it does is makes us look for more of that. And the opportunity is out there. All you got to do is take off those negative goggles that are filtering for all that negativity and see things clearly for the first time, and you will see that the opportunity is there. It's standing right next to the negativity stuff. But because you're filtering for all the garbage, that's what you're getting. So let's take those negativity goggles off and look at what the world has in front of us. And it's so amazing to hear your tone from last week and how happy and excited that you are about what's going on. Now, were you able to do that, Nikki? Were you able to kind of rip those negative goggles off?
I kind of just, you know, buried it so I could get through yesterday and feel accomplished.
Well, you got to get them out from you and throw them in the trash. It's got to be a physical casting away. And then
that's kind of what I did, because I didn't really, there wasn't an ounce of negative in me yesterday. It was kind of like, I got this.
Perfect. So when you say you buried it like in the backyard, right? Not inside yourself?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I was just making sure where the tombstone was. So that's great. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't still in you, because you sound so great today. I can't begin to tell you what a weight that has been lifted off of your shoulders. And I'm so excited, because now that you've ditched that negativity and buried it in the backyard, now everything is possible, and now we can really get some momentum and really create the life that you deserve, the life that you're passionate about. And I'm so proud of you, because what huge strides that you've made. And I'm so excited for your friend who's your support system, because that's what we need. We need the rah-rah cheerleaders. We want to zip out the negativity, put ourselves in a bubble, and the only people that come in the bubble are the people that are supportive of the activity inside the bubble. All the negative people got to go out. And so I'm so excited for your buddy that you spent time with the other evening, and he kind of gave you that pep talk that you needed and really reinforced all of the great things. This is a good person for you to have in your life. And I'm so excited that he chose to be your friend, and he is willing to go out and be that support.
Oh, this is a she.
Oh, she. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. He, she, it, we, they. I'm back. But I'm so excited that you have someone like that to be able to bounce off and keep you pumped up and redirect those positive, passionate feelings that you have. I'm so excited for you. So that's a great thing. So are you ready for writing down all of the nuts and bolts for today, our key statement, key affirmation, and key action items for this week? Okay, great. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth through real estate, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do that systematically every week on this show. And for your nuts and bolts this week, our key statement is, I understand it's good to have the myriad of emotions I share with myself, my friends, and my family. And I realize that those emotions need to be kept in perspective and put my passions in the people and the things I do, but leave them in that perspective and take emotion out of my financial decision-making future. So that's a powerful statement. So today's action item is I am excellent at keeping my passions in perspective when managing my money. I am excellent at keeping my passions in perspective when managing my money. Now, our key action item is going to be a little bit lengthy today because I'm going to challenge you on a couple of different fronts for this week with regard to this key. Because keeping our passions in perspective is not the simplest, or I shouldn't say, it's not an easy task, but it's simple. But we have to remember our response ability, our ability to respond to every stimulus, okay? So we're going to have a few key action items. So if we are at the mall or shopping, and we see that fabulous new dress or that latest video game, like my fabulous 12-year-old son, or that puppy in the window at the mall, while we want to be thrilled to see such a cute little thing and we need to enjoy that moment, we need to keep that passion for whatever it is in perspective and respond appropriately to that stimulus and know that it's okay to look at it, but is this going to take me closer to my financial goals by having this, or is it going to take me further away from my financial goals if I have this? So when we get that fabulous dress in our hand or that video game or whatever, that new toy or gun or game, whatever it is, whatever excites you, whatever floats your boat, what makes your emotions run wild, when we're shopping, we need to be able to set that item down after we picked it up and loved on it and touched it and held it and tried it on. And we need to take a step back and say, okay, while I love this item, and it would be really fabulous to have this item, is this really taking me closer or further away? Closer or further away? And if it's closer, then that's okay. If it's further away, then we know what the answer is. Leave it on the shelf. Walk away from the item. Take another lap around the mall. Give yourself 30 days, isp, especially if it's a pricey item. If it's something that is not in your weekly disposable income from your paycheck that you can spend on frivolous little tchotchkes and things, then you really need to walk away for 30 days. And then in 30 days, if it's still right there, then you need to make a plan to acquire it, not go nuts and not buy it on credit and all of that good stuff, and save up if it's that important for you to have it. But we've got to learn how to take our emotion out of the picture and dissociate it when we make decisions financially. Because if we get too emotional, our ability to respond shuts off. There's no way we can make a rational, unbiased decision when all those hormones are kicking in. It's just impossible. The brain is shut off. It's physiologically impossible to make an effective decision when you're caught up emotionally. And I know this because I fight with this challenge every day. Because let me tell you, preteens are not the easiest to manage, especially when you're the step monster. So I know this firsthand because it's tough to get kids to listen when they're your own, and when they're not your own, you've got additional challenges. And I see it happening in myself when I start to flip out because of whatever's gone on, and I flip out, there's just nothing good that's going to come out of it. Because then I flip out, and then he flips out, and then dad flips out, and nothing, not one single good thing gets accomplished. But if I back up and I say, okay, while this really irritates me and I'm violently upset about what just happened, like somebody who eats the last Krispy Kreme when I had it marked or something like that, and I say, okay, what do I want to occur? And if I work backwards from what my desired result is, I can respond effectively. So my challenge to you, and this is kind of neat, because if you can take emotion out of every picture, not just your financial picture, but through my example, and I can then say, okay, what is the desired result? What do I want to teach this person, this other human being? And I apply it that way. My challenge to you is to take a step back, to stop the reaction that gets hung up chemically. And sometimes it might not be immediate. You might not be able to shut it off right away because you just get this massive endorphin rush, this massive kick of adrenaline that just says fight or flee. And so you might have to actually take yourself out of the experience and back up about 10 feet or 20 feet or the next room or take a walk around the block and dissociate yourself from all of that. Change the game, interrupt the pattern, stop what's going on, and remove yourself from the situation. And then when you're able to calm down, when your body has metabolized all those hormones, and now you're thinking of something else or you're doing something else, then go back and revisit the situation and effectively respond to it as opposed to react. And that comes to bill paying, that comes to all kinds of decision-making that you have to do with regard to your finances. How much money do I put away for retirement? Well, I feel like I really want this thing now. I feel like I should have a fancy car now. Why do I have to save for my future? That's not fair. You know, and you got to get up from the table. You got to get up from the table, and you got to walk away and dissociate yourself from the emotion. We're coming up to break the budget. And so this is where the rubber is going to meet the road with all of the assessment that we've been doing with our assessment envelope and collecting all those receipts, because you've been collecting them for a while now, and I haven't told you what we're going to do with them. And when we go through these, you are going to be experiencing a myriad of emotions, good, bad, and indifferent. And let me tell you, that is where the breakdown occurs. And that's why this key comes before break the budget. Because you're going to have to make some difficult decisions, potentially. Because the reality is our economy is crap. Our government doesn't know what they're doing. They're writing checks that they're behind, can't cash. If you hadn't noticed, they just extended this homeowner thing. And where is that money going to come from? You can't keep printing it. So now we have encumbered our children with our government's debt and our children's children with debt. So retirement, Social Security, it does not exist as our parents and grandparents knew it. Long gone is the day of pensions. We have to be financially proactive to take care of ourselves our entire lives. And so the rubber's going to meet the road in a few weeks, and we're going to have to make some tough decisions. So that's why it's so key that we learn this week what to do with our emotions. And obligations are something we respond to. We meet our obligation. The obligation is there to pay our bills, to plan our future. Our ability to respond effectively is 100% related to our ability to take our emotions out of the picture. Because we have to be rational and we have to be calculating and thoughtful when we decide what we're going to do for today, because today affects our financial future. And if we do not pull our emotions out of the picture, there is no way we can respond to our obligations effectively. So this is all about responsibility. So that's your key word for the day, too. You get like a bonus, dictionary.com word of the day. And that's responsibility, your ability to respond to stimulus. Our obligations are our stimulus. Our spouse is our stimulus. Parents, children, we've got all kinds of stimulus. So with our affirmation, I forgot to tell you how to do that, what to do with your affirmation. So when we have our affirmations, we need to say them regularly, because what we are trying to do is train our conscious, our subconscious, and our superconscious to create the state as if we are having the desired result already. So our affirmations work in this fashion. We need to say them first thing in the evening as we're going to bed. We need to read them out loud to ourselves so it trains our subconscious and programs it to focus on it all night while we sleep. So it creates new neural pathways that will help facilitate our goals. And then, after a fabulous, restful, recuperative night's sleep, we are going to wake up in the morning feeling rested and refreshed, and we are going to read our affirmations again, now to focus our conscious mind on what our goals are. And then, anytime throughout the day when we encounter negativity, we're going to pull out that affirmation sheet, and we're going to go through our affirmations again, okay? And so, if we have heated words with our coworkers, our spouses, our bosses, our subordinates, our customers, our clients, our kids, our relatives, whomever. What you think about, you bring about. So reprogram and redirect your thought by rereading your affirmations. See them every day, several times throughout the day. And what you think about, you bring about. So remember that. Thank you so much for joining us this week. I am so grateful to our bankruptcy guest on Investor's Edge, David Galoob, for joining us, Galoobchik, for joining us today. As always, thank you to Karen Gurm, our illustrious producer and segment host, and to our hardworking Unlock Your Wealth protege, Nikki Payne. You've done some tremendous work this week. Make sure you pat yourself on the back for that, because it's been huge. Next week, coming up, are you guys ready for this? Holy smokes. It's hope for the best, plan for the worst. That's next week's key. On the midweek update, you have your 30-minute shot in the arm to help get you through the week until you can get your two-hour fix on Saturdays. So Wednesdays, 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, tune in to the midweek update. We will have our Millionaire Minute and all kinds of stuff. We thank you so much for being a part of this week's broadcast. And if you'd like to know what's coming up on next week's show, sign up for the e-zine. Send us an email at ezine@unlockyourwealth.com or visit the website at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll chat with you again on Wednesday.
I've had it up to here, listening to a small segment of people trying to put down America. America's the greatest land on earth, and we ought to be proud of what we have. I'm proud of America. I'm proud of our people, and I'm going to prove it. We're American, and damn proud of it.
Frankly, I'm getting a little ticked off.
Go to hell.
Ticked off.
Go to